Welcome back to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan in studio, and we have the Grizz on the line from City of Peace, the beautiful La Paz, Baja California, sir. And we're just talking a little bit about sharks, so let's go ahead and talk a little bit about it. Zig, Grizz, on your Facebook, I noticed a picture that you took recently, and it does not look like a real picture. So
no, it's
like
incredible. I would like to say I took that picture, but I didn't. My son Charles did. That was a shark that I caught, and we wanted to take a picture of just how a circle hook actually finds its way into the corner of any fish.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm pulling it up on the leader, and Charlie's hanging off the gunwale and gets that picture, which is just really went all over the place. They're using it in eagle claw, trocar hooks, everywhere, because it's just so unique, that picture.
It didn't look real to me, but if you say it is, then I'm going with that.
Well, yeah, there's no reason why to make it up. If you look at it, you can see the teeth and the eye, and you can even see the eyelid.
Yeah.
You know, you can actually see. You can't make that kind of stuff up.
And that is on the Facebook for Mike Ritz, correct?
Yeah, it's on Mike Ritz. It's also on Mike the Grizz Ritz.
Okay.
It's on Trocar. It's on Eagle Claw.
Okay, interesting.
I mean, basically, it's almost all over everywhere.
Okay, but you've been out shark fishing, and I know you'd said before that there seems to be a lot more around than you're used to.
Well, John, what happened just the other day, we decided that we were going to go out marlin fishing, so we went out of La Paz, and we caught some skipjack. And we chopped them up in little bitty pieces to chum up the green jack and blue runners for bait. Little did we know we would soon be swamped by sharks.
Wow.
I mean, we had over 7 sharks circling the boat. And what the unique thing was, they were literally coming up eating pieces of chum the size of popcorn.
Hmm.
Coming right out of the water, and you know when you feed your fish in an aquarium, how the fish will
come up to the top and grab it.
Yeah. Well, that's what these sharks were doing.
Hmm.
So I told Charles and the cameraman, you know what, guys, we're going to do a shark show.
What kind of sharks were these, Grizz?
We caught between Charles and I, we caught 6, and every one of them was over 150 pounds.
And what species?
They were all silkies.
Silkies. Okay, that's a common fish
down
there.
Yeah, they were all silkies.
Can you kind of describe that? Is it's kind of like a
silky looks an awful lot like a mako.
Oh.
You know, the pointed nose, the color, the brownish-gray color, back, the white belly, you know, the fins, the tail. They could be mistaken, I think, for a mako.
Okay.
Well, and they're everywhere. I mean, I just talked to a guy who called me yesterday, and he was so mad because he went out to catch rooster fish, because the rooster fish are really happening now. And every time he put a bait in the water, a shark would bite him. So he got mad and came back in. He said he couldn't have a live bait on for more than 5 minutes.
The shark would find it. Wow.
Yep.
Now, is there
And then here in Costa Baja, where I keep my boat, in the marina, there are, I don't know, 20, 30 sharks swimming around in the marina.
And the same species?
Yes.
Well, you also have hammerheads down there, too, don't you?
Oh, we've got a lot of hammerheads.
Mm-hmm.
But the hammerheads tend to be on the bottom.
Oh.
You know, you very rarely see them up. I mean, if you got to get down to 80 to 120 feet, and that's where you'll find your big hammerhead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're a great sport fish. And then, of course, mako, do you have any threshers down there?
Yes, we have lots of threshers.
Okay.
Not this time of year. They're in the spring.
Yeah, cooler water.
Yeah, but the threshers and the makos are the jumping sharks of the world.
Oh yeah, they're incredible. I accidentally hooked one some years ago, and I was fishing with my granddaughter, and she hooked into a thresher on 20-pound test line, and this was about a 60-pound thresher, and that thing just took off like it was, you know, bounding out of the water, in and out of the water, like it was headed for Japan. Fortunately, we were able to land it, but they're a lot of fun, and if you know thresher, you know, we don't like to see anything overfished or kilt, but mako and thresher can
they are
sport
good
fish.
Table
yeah.
Fair.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those two. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I've eaten several mako in my life and mm-hmm. a couple threshers, and they're just really good table
yeah,
fare.
Just
you don't want to eat them all the time because of the problem with the mercury.
Okay, because they eat a lot of smaller fish. Also, either one of those fish, you probably, if you can avoid it, you know, don't freeze them for later. Just eat them fresh because they taste a lot better that way.
Well, so does everything.
Well, especially those, because the way they...
But anyway, this has been a really freak year for sharks. I've never seen anything like it. And I've been fishing, you know, all over the world. I've never been circled by seven big sharks.
Hmm.
Put 150 to 300-pound sharks circling your boat.
Well, it sounds scary, but I kind of mentioned now.
It was beautiful for us. We got pictures. We got underwater cameras taking pictures of them swimming by. And,
right. Well, let's comment a little bit about that, Grizz, because, I think there's a lot of misconception about sharks, about a shark in the water, and you better get out of the water real quick or, you know, he's going to bite your leg off. And there are normally the great whites, the shark attacks that we have in the United States are almost always from a great white. But the great whites really don't like to eat people. Can you comment on that?
Well, you know, it's not on their menu, match the hatch type of thing. Sharks eat what is natural for them to eat, just like a trout eats what's natural for a trout to eat. You know, they're not going to eat a human because it's, first of all, they don't have the concept that a human is food. It doesn't have the smell. So, I mean, no, they're not going to go after a human to eat it, you know. Things were a lot calmer before Jaws. And when
yeah.
Jaws came out in 1969,
wow.
People went absolutely crazy and think that sharks are actually people, and it's not true. However, you do not want to jump out of a boat and look like a seal because...
So
that
if you've got a black wetsuit
food.
And fins, and especially in turbid water.
Yeah, well, of course, you know, anything in dirty water can be a problem. The silky sharks is pretty unique about them. We had guys swim with them and stuff, and they have a tendency to bite the flippers.
Oh.
Come actually up behind the divers and start biting on the flippers of the people. Whether they're tasting to see if it's a seal or a sea lion, I can't answer that,
right.
But they are very common
right.
for doing that.
Well, things are, who knows what's happening, but things are certainly not normal. You've had three named hurricanes in June off of Baja California, sir. Fortunately, there was no damage, but I don't think that's ever happened before. And then
to my knowledge, and everyone tells me the same.
Right.
No.
And then of course, the water temperatures and the fish that you're finding are something strange is happening. I don't know if it's the aliens or what, but anyway,
well,
we're going to have to.
You know, I'll tell you right now, John. Fishing's better than I've ever seen in my life.
Oh,
you go
yeah.
out
yeah. Well,
right now and catch blues, black stripes
right.
in the
well,
same
off,
day.
Off of California, it's been incredible. And apparently the Atlantic, they've got some warm water coming up, too. Matter of fact, in the next segment, we're going to talk about sharks in Montauk. But we got to go now, Grizz. So hang in there. We're going to be back with you in just a couple of minutes. You are listening to Fish Talk Radio. Go to fishtalkradio.com and listen as many times as you want.
First named La Paz in 1566, the fourth largest municipality in Mexico still has a provincial Mexican atmosphere. On the Sea of Cortez, the most biodiverse body of water in the world, La Paz has year-round world-class fishing. With a rich history of pearls, pirates, and legendary fishing, La Paz in Baja Sur makes for the perfect fishing vacation. Spring in La Paz, you catch trophy pargo, giant yellowtail, and sierra. Find more at VivaLaPaz.com. Viva La Paz!
The East Cape of Baja, Mexico is world famous for sport fishing. Dorado, tuna, wahoo, marlin, sailfish, roosterfish, and pargo. The Van Wormer resorts make dreams come true at a price all can afford. Hotel Palmas de Cortez, Playa del Sol, and Hotel Punta Colorado have the biggest and best sport fishing fleet in all of Mexico. Call toll free to 877-777-TUNA to find out how affordable world-class fishing can be. The finest resorts and the best boats in East Cape. Call 877-777-TUNA.
Sandos is how to spell luxury resort in downtown Cabo San Lucas. Santos Finisterra Los Cabos is the only five-star all-inclusive on the beach next to the marina in Cabo San Lucas. Angler-friendly Santos Finisterra Los Cabos is now an affordable world-class resort with the finest accommodations, food, and location anywhere. Enjoy your Cabo fishing adventure as you never have. Visit Santos.com and use discount code FISHTALK.
World-class golf, fishing, and diving in the clear, warm waters of the Sea of Cortez with a true five-star resort. The Grand Heritage Hotel and Resort at Costa Baja, great value and without the hustle of other parts of Baja. On the white sand beach with Espirito Santos Island minutes away. Signature restaurants, pools, and accommodations for an intimate weekend, weddings, or corporate events. On the web at CostaBajaResort.com.
It's time for you to take a real fun adventure. Join a hosted fishing adventure to Alaska or Baja with the staff of Fish Talk Radio. Real Fun Adventures can book you on any adventure you desire. Bring your fishing friends or meet new ones. Fish Talk Radio gets the best deals from our sponsors to give you the best possible price. Real Fun Trips are inclusive, easy, no-worry packages to the most popular fish grounds. Trips start around $600. Go to reelfunadventures.com.
Vagabundos Del Mar Boat and Travel Club has 42 years experience introducing RVers to the joys of Mexico. Specializing in Baja, Vagabundos leads caravans and sponsors fishing tournaments, trailer boat cruises, and weekend getaways in Mexico and the West. Vagabundos Del Mar also saves its 10,000 members tons of money on low-cost auto insurance. Stay up to date on Mexican travel with the printed newsletter online at vagabundos.com or call 800-474-BAJA.
Welcome back to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan in studio, and we have our most popular co-host, the Grizz, Mike Ritz, out of La Paz, Baja California, sir. And we have a very special guest today. I don't think we've had Rav on before, and he's out of the Montauk Marina. And Grizz and I were talking about sharks. And speaking of sharks, Rav is, you know, they do something, was it once a year, Rav?
Well, first of all, it's the Montauk Marine Base, and it's putting on an all-release satellite tag shark tournament. It's the only one in the Northeast. It was started by Carl Derenberg, and this is our third year, and this is the first time where the prize money is respectable. The idea here is to get the anglers to compete in based on how many fish they catch. Not what the biggest fish is. All the fish are released. We put satellite tracking tags. This year we'll put satellite tracking tags on five, including one named for Carl Derenberg, who passed away last Labor Day. So this has now been renamed the Carl Derenberg Memorial Shark's Eye Tournament.
Grizz, do you have some questions about that?
No. I'm pretty familiar with that.
Really?
Yeah, I'm very familiar with over there that tournament.
Mm-hmm. Now, what type of sharks are you going to be finding, Rav? And when is the tournament itself?
The tournament is starts July 18th and ends on the 19th. The boats leave out of the Marine Base, and we'll have observers on the each boat as the anglers are competing for $25,000 in prize money, plus whatever Calcutta bets they have. And we'll have Jimmy Buffett fishing the tournament.
Oh, really?
Which is pretty exciting.
Wow.
And he tries to stay low key and doesn't want to make a lot of noise and, you know, be surrounded by folks. But he's doing this because of the plight of the sharks, and that's the reason we're doing it too.
Oh, okay. Well, we want to talk a little bit about that. And what type of sharks are you typically going to find in the middle of July in Montauk?
Makos, blue sharks, thresher sharks, and with the water changing, water temperature changing, last year we got two tiger sharks. We put satellite tracking tags in both of them. Unfortunately, neither one of them survived more than a month. They were caught again and finned.
Really? So in the tracking, you found that they were caught again and that was their demise? Did someone find the tags and turn them in?
Yeah,
how does that work?
Yeah, some tags were returned. Sometimes tags are deep sixed. The longliners are pretty good. They turn in the tags. The Montauk school kids named a blue shark Beamer. And that was that thing traveled west as far north as Portland, Maine, then west east of Bermuda, and then was finally caught off of Costa Rica.
Wow!
60-mile long line, and the tag was returned to O-Search.
Wow!
Who has been donating the tags most graciously to help us with this tournament and to let the anglers know that they can follow their fish on their smartphone instead of standing next to it and have your picture taken next to a dead one on the docks.
That's fantastic.
Wow. Yeah, well, so we give the guys a chance to name fish, and we get the school kids involved, too. The Montauk kids named two sharks. The Amagansett school kids named a shark last year, and this year Sag Harbor kids will name a shark. They came up with Seymour, S-E-A-M-O-R-E. I'm all for it. Five-year-olds. Fifth grade class, sorry.
Wow. That's incredible. Well, let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned that the shark fishery apparently has been jeopardized by overfishing.
There's, tens of millions of sharks are taken every year for their fins satisfy the Asian market. Some estimates are up to 100 million sharks.
Whoa.
So here you have a fish that is, can take 20 years to reach spawning age, weigh north of 500 pounds, and most of them never reach that size. So in Montauk, well, we've got these tournaments where we're targeting the largest fish and bringing it back to the dock. Essentially, we're taking the spawning fish out of circulation. Our aim was to let the guys catch a lot of smaller sharks, get a lot of points, more for a mako than a blue shark, and the like, and cut the big ones loose. Why wrestle with a blue shark for 1 point when you can catch a couple of small makos at five each? You release the makos while they're still green, and the blue shark is, still a large fish that can reach a spawning age. But back to the finning issue, since there's fish hooks everywhere in the world, every port's got long lines out, everybody's trying to feed everybody, I get it. And these fish are going around the ocean trying to clean it, eating dead stuff. They're all caught. Every one of the fish that we tagged over the last 2 years is gone. And the ones that we put the spaghetti tags in, the conventional tags, as far as we know, none of them are still around. And that's, some 90 sharks. So it's a problem, and we're trying to show the fishermen out here that because of what's going on with sharks and how vulnerable they are, that if they can change and do an all-release kind of tournament instead of a full tournament, still have a great time fishing, get the schools involved, conservation involved, there's science involved. It can be for everything, and the charter boat guys, you know, they make a buck, and people come to the restaurants, stay in the motels, and that's what we'd like to see happen. If when the shark fishery is sustainable, hang them up again.
Well, that's incredible, and this thing about now, obviously, if they kill a shark just for the fin, that doesn't do the shark much good, and it seems like such a waste.
And a lot of blue sharks wind up in the dumpsters.
Wow.
Mangoes are edible, and some of the lesser variety sharks that aren't edible are
right.
given to food pantries. But it's a low quality
right.
food,
well,
high in mercury.
Okay, now Grizz and I were talking a little bit earlier about should you be afraid of sharks.
I don't want to be munched on by one, I'll tell you.
But, Grizz, can you hear us okay?
Well, I'm having a hard time hearing, I can hear you fine, John.
But we're just talking about the tournament that he's doing and how the sharks are being decimated because it's in, what, the millions, did you say, that they're killed for their fins?
Yeah.
Shark
fin soup.
Yeah, that's what happens here. The places up north here in Baja, you go up there and you'll find the carcasses laying on the beach, and they'll be minus their fins.
Hmm.
It's
right. So it's up to $800 a pound, I believe, for fins. It doesn't take a lot of sharks to make 800 pounds of fin. To make a pound of fin for $800, it's a problem, big time. And in New York State, we've banned the sale of shark fins. Yet there's still a black market for them.
Right, right. Interesting. But let's talk a bit more about incidents and about being afraid of sharks. Obviously, whale sharks, you can go out and pet them. Yeah, hammerheads, I know that down in Baja where Grizz is, it's quite popular for the scuba divers to go down there and swim with the hammerheads. But, they're certainly need to be respected. But as Grizz was saying, that human is not a natural diet for any shark. So the incidents that do happen are usually by mistake or because of the lack of clarity in the water. Does that make sense, Grizz?
Well, yeah. I mean, sharks have got a real bad rap that they're going out looking for people. And I'm sure just like a big old mountain lion or a big old bear, once they get to a certain age, I mean, this is my opinion, they would take an easy prey. I mean, a mountain lion wouldn't normally attack a cow, but as it gets so old, the cow comes across it, so he jumps on his back and kills it. I could see the same thing maybe happening with a shark, because they're getting old and they can't swim fast enough to catch a sea lion, and it could take something different. I don't know that, but that's my own opinion.
And, Rav, what is your opinion and what you've seen with people being harmed by sharks on the Atlantic?
Well, most of the bites happen in turbid waters along the surf where visibility is poor. So, that's part of it. I agree with Grizz. It's the humans are not a natural diet. They're, you're a fisherman. You match the hatch. They're looking for what they used to eat.
Mm-hmm.
People get bitten. But I tell you this, you have a much greater chance being killed by a deer out here in Montana than a shark.
Yeah, I thought somebody said that mosquitoes kill like 100 times more people than sharks do. But anyway, Rav, we're going to have to close it up. So why don't you give us some quick information on that shark contest?
Okay, well, we've got July 18th and 19th. We still are looking for boats, and we're looking for observers to go out on the water for 2 days to compete for $25,000 in cash prizes. It's presented by the Guy Harvey Ocean Foundation, O-Search, the Andrew Sabin Family Foundation, and AFCO.
Okay. Get in touch with Guy Harvey or AFCO, and or just get in touch with Fish Talk Radio, and I'll set you up. Anyway, we got to go.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rav. You did a great job. You're listening to Fish Talk Radio.
Take me up a water right now.
The road stretches for miles in front of you. And with the Ram 1500, you'll be able to reach mile after open mile. It gets a best-in-class 25 miles per gallon highway, so your destination won't just be determined by your gas gauge, but by your gauge for achievement. And the Ram 1500 is the first ever back-to-back Motor Trend Truck of the Year. Guts. Glory. Ram. See your local Ram dealer today for great deals. EPA estimated 25 mpg highway based on V6 4x2.
If you like the show you are listening to right now, you can listen to it and many more just like it on Reno Viola Outdoors Radio. Fishing, hunting, boating, and the rest of the great outdoors, 24/7, 365 on Reno Viola Outdoors Radio. Download the free Reno Viola's Outdoor Radio app or visit WRVORadio.com online to see the lineup and schedule. That's Reno Viola Outdoors Radio. And enjoy the great outdoors.
Vagabundos Del Mar Boat and Travel Club has 42 years experience introducing RVers to the joys of Mexico. Specializing in Baja, Vagabundos leads caravans and sponsors fishing tournaments, trailer boat cruises, and weekend getaways in Mexico and the West. Vagabundos Del Mar also saves its 10,000 members tons of money on low-cost auto insurance. Stay up to date on Mexican travel with the printed newsletter online at vagabundos.com or call 800-474-BAJA.
The East Cape of Baja, Mexico is world-famous for sport fishing. Dorado, tuna, wahoo, marlin, sailfish, roosterfish, and pargo. The Van Wormer resorts make dreams come true at a price all can afford. Hotel Palmas de Cortez, Playa del Sol, and Hotel Punta Colorado have the biggest and best sport fishing fleet in all of Mexico. Call toll-free to 877-777-TUNA to find out how affordable world-class fishing can be. The finest resorts and the best boats in East Cape. Call 877-777-TUNA.
First named La Paz in 1566, the fourth largest municipality in Mexico still has a provincial Mexican atmosphere. On the Sea of Cortez, the most biodiverse body of water in the world, La Paz has year-round world-class fishing. With a rich history of pearls, pirates, and legendary fishing, La Paz in Baja Sur makes for the perfect fishing vacation. Spring in La Paz, you catch trophy pargo, giant yellowtail, and sierra. Find more at VivaLaPaz.com. Viva La Paz!
It's a beautiful day, oh, what do you say? Let's go fishing. What a wonderful way to spend the day just a fishing. Oh, the water on the lake is smooth as glass. Oh, we might catch a sunny, we might catch a bass. Oh, what do you say? Let's go fishing.
Welcome back to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan in studio, and we're going to shift gears a little bit. We were on at Montauk, and we've been down, of course, still in La Paz, Baja California, sir. Now we're going to switch all the way over to Ketchikan, Alaska. We have Tori Korn from Taquan Air in Ketchikan, Alaska. And if you have ever taken a cruise to Alaska, a lot of people have done that and they think it's really cool. But if you really want to see Alaska, get off the cruise ship, get on a float plane. And I'll tell you what, Tori, why don't you tell them what's going to happen?
Yeah, well, there's no better way to see Southeast Alaska than from a float plane, we feel. And so Taquan Air will fly to a number of different places. We do most of our sightseeing tours go out to the Misty Fjords, which is a national monument about 25 miles west of Ketchikan. But in addition to that, we fly scheduled flights and charter flights all over Southeast. So Prince of Wales Island is a big destination, in particular for people that want to go fishing. And then Metlakatla and Hyder and places like that producing Bearview and things like that. So kind of all over the place. But Misty Fjords is by far the most popular destination to go.
Well, Grizz, what I'd like to do one of these days is get you up there and let Tori take us on a float plane out to one of these remote lakes for fly fishing, and they drop you off, and you know, if you need a guide, they'll stay there with you. And, you know, from what I recall, and Tori can correct me if I'm wrong, there's kind of a code where there's so many lakes that you take off in a float plane and you think what lake you want to go to. And if there's already a float plane on that lake, and these lakes might be 5, 7, 8 miles across, if there's a float plane on that lake, you go to the next one.
Yeah, that's right. There's plenty of places to fish up there, especially when you get up in some of the alpine lakes. And then, you know, real popular now are with the lakes with cabins on them, too. So you can do a couple days out there and get the real feeling of solitude. And the trout fishing is just amazing in some of these landlocked lakes that don't have the salmon runs in them. You know, big trout, big cutthroats. So it's good fishing and a beautiful place to stay.
What do you think, Grizz? You want to go?
Yeah, I love Alaska, to be honest with you. I used to go in and fish Nunavak all the time. I absolutely love Nunavak.
Where is Nunavak? I haven't heard of that.
You know where Nunavak Island is, don't you, buddy?
Nunavak Island's probably in the Aleutians. I'm guessing it's 2,000 miles from Ketchikan.
It's way up north.
okay. Yeah. But, well, Alaska is an interesting place, and if you haven't been there, we really recommend it. If you want to take a cruise, and if that's your lifestyle, and that's what you want to do, do that.
It's boring.
But, you know, but if you want to just fly up to Seattle and then take a flight to Ketchikan, which that's what we're going to be doing next week, or anywhere else, get off. They have some great places, and it doesn't have to be expensive. And, you know, most of the fishing lodges are all-inclusive. I know that Clover Pass, where we're going, for, you know, about $1,700, $1,800 for 5 nights, includes everything, boats and everything. But that way you get to see the real deal. And if you want to get on a float plane and see one of the remote lakes and fly over Misty Fjords and the glaciers. And what's really cool about those float planes is they fly quite slow and low to the ground. So you can actually, you know, see the eyes on the longhorn sheep and the different critters up there.
Yeah, I mean, we have access because of the type of aircraft we fly. We have access to some very remote areas, and you know, the De Havilland Beaver is the majority of the aircraft we fly, and you know, it's been the workhorse of float plane aviation for Southeast Alaska for a long time, and it's got a real short takeoff need, and you don't need a large area to get in and out of, you know. And,
well, when you say a long time, it seems to me they quit making in the 1950s, didn't they?
That's correct, yep. And we've got, you know, pretty much every year you do an annual on them and rebuild them from the skins on up, you know. So, yeah, they're obviously new engines on them every 2 years pretty much. But for the Havilland Beaver, they just have not really come up with a model that can operate any better in Southeast Alaska.
That's very interesting. But, so besides flying into remote lakes, there's you know, if someone's on a float plane, what else do you recommend they do?
Well, so depending on the time of year, the bear viewing, if you're into bear viewing kind of stuff or wildlife viewing, bear viewing is really good kind of mid-July on. So we'll go into areas on Prince of Wales like Polk Inlet, Dog Salmon Creek, Trader's Cove, and there's a number of areas you can go, and there's access through Forest Service docks and cabins, some great bear viewing locations. But really, I think kind of one of the hidden gems in Southeast is Prince of Wales Island. You know, very small communities, really neat areas, but the outdoor recreation is just phenomenal, whether you want to fish or kayak or hike or whatever it is. You know, Prince of Wales Island has more roads on it than Ketchikan by far, you know, and it's the third largest island in the United States, to kind of give you an idea of how big it is. And we fly to like 12 different communities on it, and it's really just a really unique area to visit.
Well, a lot of these communities you're talking about, but the only way to get there is either some of them you can't even get there by ferry, but about the only way to get there is by boat or by airplane, right?
That's correct, yeah. So if you fly into Ketchikan, which is less than 2 hours from Seattle, and you know, on a 737. I think Delta and Alaska are both flying in here this summer. And then you can take a ferry or a float plane over to Prince of Wales, about a three-hour ferry ride. And most of the communities are hooked up to the road system, but, you know, we fly into an area called Point Baker in Port Protection, and neither of those are connected directly to the road system. So you're looking at a community of maybe 40 people with one or two fishing lodges in there and some self-guided type fishing, way off the grid. And the only way to get in there is by float plane.
Hmm. Well, sounds good to me. Maybe I'm going to be up there, in the next 10 days or so. So I'll have to see if you could. Downtown Ketchikan is kind of an interesting place too.
Yeah, you know, the downtown changes dramatically depending on how many cruise ships are in town that day.
Yeah.
We can get anywhere from one to, we had six ships just yesterday in town at the same time, so about 12,000 visitors for the day yesterday. So you can get more visitors in downtown than there are residents for a short period of time.
Interesting people that live there, and there's some very interesting, establishments that... that sell adult beverages.
Yeah, there's some good local watering holes, that's for sure. You know, from Culver Pass all the way out to the hole in the wall south of town, they're all pretty good.
Okay. And that's, well, let's get up there. Grizz, we got to do a television show up there. What do you think?
We'll just call it North of the Border instead of South of the Border, John.
Yeah, there you go. Adventures North of the Border instead of South of the Border. There you go. But, actually, that may not be a bad idea. I think we probably could find somebody up there that'd be interested in doing that.
I'm sure there'd be a number of people interested in that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Grizz has got, if you go to his website, it's ASOB, and that's not what you think it is. It stands for Adventures South of the Border. And it's Adventures South of the Border, or ASOBProductions.com. Is that correct, Grizz?
Yeah, it's ASOBProductions.com, and there you can find all the things that we're doing and all the television networks we're on.
Mm-hmm. And also, while we're talking to Tori, let's get a little bit of information more about Takuan Air, about what the operation's like, and I know that you've got more than one operation up there because float planes are quite popular in that area. They're all over the place. But give us an idea about your operation and how that works.
Yeah, so Takuan Air has 8 De Havilland Beavers and 1 Cessna Caravan, which is a 9-passenger aircraft. And you know, we operate year-round, so we have mail and charter contracts and scheduled flights all year-round. And then during the summer, we have the tours and sightseeing trips to that mix. And then we've got a couple of sister companies that are our seasonal operations in the summertime where we do, we've got an ATV tour called the Adventure Carts where we take people on some of the old logging roads out here and a self-drive kind of tour. And then a company called Alaska Canopy Adventures. We operate 3 different zip line tours in the area. And then Alaska Rainforest Sanctuary, which does kind of wildlife and nature tours, so guided and interpretive walks. And again, later in the summer, a lot of bear viewing opportunity, both fly out and drive to stuff. So really busy operation, May through September. And then we kind of keep 4 planes going in the wintertime, kind of servicing the local communities and keeping everybody tied in with the mail and UPS and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like Ketchikan for a lot of reasons. First of all, it's simple, inexpensive to get to. You just land at the airport and the lodge picks you up. And then also some of the lodges like Waterfall, they'll take maybe one of your planes and you take them out to one of their resorts. But it's simple. It's basically the tropics of Alaska because, it's so hard to comprehend how big Alaska is.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, from end to end, you could be, literally thousands of miles apart when you're in Alaska. So, mm-hmm. And really different scenery and really different backdrops depending on the area in Alaska you're in. And I think you hit it right on with the lodges in Ketchikan. You've got everything from real high-end, guided fishing trips to, more basic combination with self-guided trips, too, where you get your own boat and take yourself out fishing. So it's kind of something for everybody depending on your skill level and what you want to do.
Okay. The other places besides Ketchikan, of course, if you want to continue up the Inland Passage and go up to Sitka or continue on up all the way up, go to Juneau in those areas. But it really is, if you haven't experienced it, you need to do it, and it can be expensive, but it doesn't have to be expensive.
Yeah, I think there's so many different options, and it's, you know, it's a competitive business up here, so, you know, there's always deals available, I think, and self-conscious travel.
Well, we were talking about sharks. You need to be careful of the grizzlies up there.
Oh, the brown bears are all over the place, but yeah. I think if you're smart, keep your eyes open.
There you go. Well, I'll tell you the story about a grizzly. Well, we don't have enough time right now, so save it for another time. Well, let me try it in 10 seconds. How do you tell the difference in scat from a grizzly from a brown bear or a black bear?
Burn it.
Well, as you know, that when you're walking through, you're supposed to wear bells and things so they can hear you coming, and you want to give pepper spray. Well, the black bear's scat has seeds in it, and the grizzly's has it smells like pepper spray and has bells in it. Anyway, we got to go.
I didn't think that was funny at all, John.
I know, but I'm trying. I'm trying. Okay. You're listening to Fish Talk Radio. We appreciate that. Tune in and see us at fishtalkradio.com.